Windows 10 embodies what our consumer and our enterprise customers are demanding. We will be making available a free upgrade.
Cortana, we're excited to welcome you to the PC.
The Windows Insider program gives us that connection at an earlier phase than at any other time in the history of Windows.
From people needing Windows to choosing Windows to loving Windows.
Buongiorno. Buongiorno a tutti. Tutto bene? Tutto bene? Grande. Allora, benvenuti a Build Tour. Quest'anno Microsoft Corporation ha deciso di realizzare questo tour in giro per il mondo, dopo la nostra conferenza di Build. Quindi siamo di fatto in competizione con tante altre country e quindi vogliamo lasciare alle persone di Corp un bel ricordo dell'Italia, così l'anno prossimo lo rifanno. E quindi fate domande, partecipate, adesso vi racconto un po' la logistica, l'agenda e poi avremo il piacere di avere 4 speaker internazionali che ci racconteranno Windows 10, da tanti punti di vista, per cui non abbiate paura di alzare la mano, fare domande, poi vi racconto un po' come sarà. Io lavoro in Microsoft da tanti anni, oggi sono responsabile della divisione di evangelismo, che è la divisione che fa eventi di questo tipo, noi li facciamo anche in Italia, vi invitiamo spesso. Oggi per noi è veramente un grande successo perché aver scelto Milano come una tappa per il Build Tour significa avere una grande attenzione da parte di Corporation e questo ci fa molto piacere. Avremo tante cose da dire, ci sarà una keynote fino alle 11, poi avremo il piacere di ospitare un po' di partner che ci faranno vedere cosa stanno facendo su Windows 10, che cosa hanno fatto, cose e storie interessanti, tanti argomenti. Avremo una sessione finale di Q&A, molto corposa e quindi ci aspettiamo tante domande. Vi racconterò un po' come funziona il meccanismo delle domande, per cui se avete delle domande poi vi spiegherò come farle agli speaker. Prima di iniziare, doverosi ringraziamenti. I primi ringraziamenti sono a queste persone, che sono quelle che indossano la maglietta viola come la mia, che io indosso indegnamente, che sono là. Sono gli MVP, sono persone scelte da Microsoft, esperti di tutte queste tecnologie che ci accompagnano in questi eventi, per cui durante i break se avete bisogno di informazioni, volete chiedere qualcosa, questi sono i nomi, queste sono le tecnologie che seguono, andate lì, rompetegli le scatole e fategli tante domande. Abbiamo poi due colleghi di Microsoft che ringrazio, Claudio, che qui in veste di Bing, ma se volete fargli qualche domanda su Cortana lo potete fare, dato che è responsabile anche di quella parte, e Matteo, qualunque domanda su App, lui è la persona giusta a cui chiedere. Ringrazio gli sponsor che vedete lì, hanno bellissimi device da mostrarvi, quindi vi invito ad andare ai loro booth, a guardare i loro device, sono bellissimi, li vedete in questa slide e quindi anche lì grande attenzione da parte loro, Windows 10 per loro è un evento importante, l'idea di rilanciare un po' il mondo dei PC, tablet e tutto quello che uscirà, per cui è sicuramente un momento importante anche per loro. Come di consueto, hashtag BuildTour, twittate, postate, cose belle, mi raccomando, sennò Corp poi non torna più. Quindi se avete cose brutte da dire ce le dite di persona, non le twittate. Il live tweet è MSD Vita. Abbiamo il Microsoft Corner lì, dove ci sono persone di Microsoft che vi racconteranno un po' dei nostri device, Lumia, Xbox, Surface, e avete la possibilità di recuperare dei voucher da spendere su microsoftstore.it, per cui potete recuperare questi voucher e avere uno sconto per lo store. Siamo in streaming, ci sono delle telecamere che registreranno tutto l'evento e lo stanno mandando in streaming oggi sul sito Microsoft e sui siti di comunità che ci ospitano, e quindi grande attenzione a vedere anche quanta gente si collegherà da internet. Vi dicevo prima, domande e risposte. Utilizziamo un tool, un sito web, potete accederci col Q-code, via web, non importa, i link sono qua, per cui ogni volta che vi viene in mente una domanda, dove è finito? Vabbè, ce l'avete. Ogni volta che vi viene in mente una domanda, scrivetela sul tool, noi la registreremo, ne terremo traccia. Alla fine dell'evento, nella sessione di Q&A, faremo le domande agli speaker, quindi non vi preoccupate dell'inglese, non vi preoccupate di fare domande, no, un po' strane. Quelle strane le cancelliamo noi e mostreremo le domande più interessanti. Io vi ringrazio della partecipazione. Chiamo sul palco Andy, che è il primo speaker di Corp. Dov'è Andy? Andy? Ecco, se no iniziavo io, Andy. Un applauso a Andy. Hi. Thank you for coming. Have a good luck.
Yeah, thank
doing
you.
Great events.
Thanks a lot.
The stage is yours.
All right, thank you. Buongiorno. How are you doing?
Great, great.
I'm Andy. I have just started working for Microsoft Corp. I worked for Microsoft UK until 2 days ago. But I'm guy responsible for building a lot of the developer content that you'll find up on Channel 9 and on Microsoft Virtual Academy. We just published last week a whole new training course of videos for developers around Windows 10 called A Developer's Guide to Windows 10. So I hope you'll check that out. So I'm really happy to be here, to be your host this morning for this keynote, and I just want to say thank you for all of you to come along and share this day with us. Now, a little bit, about 6 weeks or so, no, just over a month ago, we had the Build Conference in San Francisco. Very popular event, sells out in next to no time. And it was spectacularly successful. We were number one trending on Twitter worldwide. Great feedback, and we showed great demos like the amazing Raspberry Pi robot with the HoloLens augmented reality overlay on top of it. Really cool stuff, and we got people really excited about what Microsoft is doing again. And the team I've just joined, the team in Seattle, they are the team who are behind the keynotes for those kind of conferences for Build. And there was so much great content at Build, 3 days of it, packed with great stuff. So what we wanted to do was to take the best of that Build content and bring it out to you, to meet some developers face to face. So it's an ambitious target we've set ourselves. We're hitting 26 cities across the world. And we're really, really happy to be here in Milan, but this is number 22. So Nicola, who's with me backstage, and he's going to be coming on and helping me with this, we were on the very first Build Tour event in London a few weeks back, and then Nicola has been on the road. He's been all over the place in Australia and New Zealand and Southeast Asia, and he's like collecting so many air miles you wouldn't believe. And I don't think he's had any sleep in like 2 weeks, but he's still delivering great stuff. So we're bringing all this great content. Please help us make this day spectacular. The hashtag is there. Please let us know how you feel about the day. So let's just start by talking about what is Microsoft's vision today. So we really want to empower every person and every organization on the planet to achieve more. And when we talk about empowering, that starts with developers. It starts with empowering every developer on the planet. So we want to create experiences that span across devices and services, about mobile and the cloud. So today we're going to talk about the device platform, about a lot of cool new stuff we're bringing for that, and also about the cloud platform for developers. Because we as developers, you know, we're building these sophisticated systems, these mobile applications, these mobile systems. We need to make sure the user stays at the center of that experience. It's not about the device. It's not about having an app on a little screen. It's about creating a mobile experience that travels across a user's devices And the tools that help you build that sort of thing are great devices on the one hand, and then great cloud services behind it as well. So I want to start with the device platform and the world of opportunity that Windows 10 opens for us. First of all, how are we going to create a large addressable market for Windows 10, for apps that target Windows 10? Well, with Windows 10, we empower developers to reach Windows customers wherever they are and on whatever device they happen to be using. You can now build one app using the same common APIs. You can have one app that can run on everything from tiny Internet of Things devices, little sensor $35 computers, through phones, phablets, tablets, PCs, laptops, all-in-ones, convertibles, all the way up to big 84-inch wall-mounted Surface hub displays. These are the team collaboration systems that you'll see in meeting rooms before too long. And even really innovative hardware, like the fantastic HoloLens. Now, there's a huge amount of HoloLens interest out there from all of us. It's like a really exciting product. And I have to tell you now, I'm really sorry, but we weren't able to bring one to this event. And I know that would be a disappointment to many of you. But at the moment, there's not that many of them, and they're kind of a bit fragile, still very much prototype hardware, and it's also very sophisticated video technology we need to be able to show you what the HoloLens is showing. But we've got a lot of information on that and build it into the talks that we're going to give you this morning. So to make all of this worthwhile, we know that we need to get Windows 10 to be broadly adopted. In fact, our goal is a bold one. We want to get Windows 10 onto over 1 billion devices within the next 2 to 3 years. So that's an ambitious goal. But to help us along that, we know that we need to help you to adopt it. So we are now going to be giving a free upgrade, an unusual price, free upgrade for users on Windows 7, Windows 8, and Windows Phone, to bring them, allow them to get a free upgrade to install Windows 10 onto their machines. So we've announced recently we're releasing Windows 10 for desktop on July 29th, and the first invitations are going out at the moment for people to pre-register. Have any of you had one of those invitations yet? Yeah, all right, good number, yeah. So I hope you're pre-registering and getting excited about having Windows 10 on your machines. So we've also made substantial changes to enhance how users discover your apps and how they engage with Windows 10. And this all starts, actually, with sign-on. So we've got some innovative stuff coming along in Windows 10 that uses biometrics for you to log on, to identify you. So face recognition, fingerprint recognition, and the like. And so Windows 10 can recognize your face through the camera and then can sign you on automatically without having to use old-fashioned passwords. And we're working with industry bodies to extend this vision across all kinds of web commerce as well, so that we have a vision of seeing the end of the password. And once you're into Windows 10, then you get a personalized experience and recommendations that come to you of alpha features and apps that might be of interest to you based on your usage. We also brought some great features. We brought the best of Windows Phone along as well. A great feature in Windows Phone 8 is the Notification Center, where users can get all of their notifications in one list and easily action them there and find them with easy discoverability. So we've brought that feature across the board now. It's available on Windows 10 desktop as well. And not only that, we haven't just brought that feature, we've enhanced it as well. So we've got this new feature called interactive notifications, where you can actually have right there in the notification ways for the user to interact with that notification, to make a preference, to accept a meeting request or send a message. That can happen right in the Notification Center, which is an improvement of what we have in the story today, where you actually have to tap on the notification to launch the app. So we're extending the app into the notification itself. So it's really great enhancing the usability. We've also got, obviously, Cortana, and Italy is one of the nations that's getting Cortana right from the beginning. So in Cortana search, whenever you search for anything, you're going to see appropriate apps will be listed first. So this is helping you to get the best result from your searches. And we'll also make app recommendations. So you'll also see in that list for apps that you might want to consider installing. So this is a great way for you as developers to get your apps in front of users and to have them surf search ups when a user searches on Windows 10. And great new features as well, like the Continuum feature. This is really great. You see it already on convertibles like the Surface and Surface Pro, which are these laptop replacements that can operate both as a laptop, and then if you remove the keyboard, it can be operating as a full tablet, and you'll see a little pop-up on the screens asking you if you want to switch to tablet mode. So that works great for that kind of hardware, but we also announced at Build, we're bringing that to phones as well. Now, if you think about a phone, this is actually an amazingly powerful computing device. We kind of just can't use the full resources constantly because the most valuable resource on a phone, of course, is the battery. So, but in there is a really powerful processor. We just kind of run it in short bursts. That's kind of how modern smartphones work. But now think about that now. If you take that phone and you've been doing something on your phone, using it as a phone, and you get home, you could put it into a cradle, dock it, connect it up to a big screen, maybe your TV, maybe a monitor, hook up a Bluetooth keyboard and a mouse, and you've got a really adaptable system that can act fully as a PC. So all this is coming. You need new hardware on phones. So the latest chipsets that are coming out of the industry will support two screens on a phone device. So this is what we need, and we're going to be bringing out new hardware that's going to support these kind of features. And we see a lot of interest for that in certain areas of the world where people want to have a high-end phone but have that adaptability to use it as a PC as well. Another important part of this Converge story is about the store, both from the consumer point of view and also from the developer's point of view. So the store is the single store where users can get everything they want, whether it's apps, music, videos, digital magazines. You'll see the amount of things that are being sold through the store massively expand. It's going to be a true one-stop shop for end users. And also for developers as well, we're going to have one submission process for all devices. So you can create one app in Visual Studio, you can submit that one package up to the store and have it available across one or more of the device families we have in Windows 10. And we've got a whole bunch of, there's been loads of investments around the store, loads of great new features, like we're going to give you free integrated app analytics, so you're going to easily be able to understand how users are using your apps, where they're getting stuck, which features they like to use. You're going to be able to get all that features, all that information from App Insights, where all that data is surfaced up to Azure, and they will give you a portal to enable to analyze all that important information. Other stuff like video interstitials. This is a feature whereby a user watches a video and they get rewarded in some way. So this is another way of monetizing your apps as well, and very popular, particularly in video playing apps. And subscriptions, in-app purchase subscriptions, is one of our most highly requested features. So the idea that you can buy through in-app purchase a regular subscription to some kind of product. And last, but absolutely not least, of course, with Windows 10, we have truly, at last, got one developer platform. So we've had, loads of great products over the years, and they've all had fairly similar developer stories. But there's been a few little mismatches here and there, slightly different APIs here, and Xbox is different from phone and different from tablet. But now, truly, with Windows 10, we've got this universal Windows platform that's running on all of these devices, from the IoT through mobile, which is phones and small tablets, through what we call desktop, which is our PCs, laptops, convertibles, all-in-ones. The Xbox, of course, the games console in your living room. The big Surface Hub, and the holographic family, the new, brand new interesting holograms that you can generate. So we made improvements across the board for developers, and it's now easier to design, develop, and debug your app. So we've now got one design language and one control set right the way across the platform. It's going to give you a predictable, consistent toolkit for creating your user experiences across all Windows devices. This one API set, one control set across all of them. But they're smart controls. For example, we've brought this, the pivot control, which was Windows Phone only until recently. And it's the Windows Phone experience where you use a finger to swipe across, you get different panes of information, and a very popular feature for Windows Phone users. Well, that pivot control is now available across all Windows devices. But it's not exactly the same because these controls are smart. They have built-in adaptability, so they are contextually aware. So on the desktop, you get the same pivot, but it renders more like a tab control. And that's right the way across all of our different device families. And we've got new controls as well, like this calendar control. So this is a brand new calendar control, and this is the same one you'll see in the taskbar used by our first-party apps as well. So another great thing about the story with the Universal Windows platform is all of the out-of-the-box apps that you get, all the built-in experiences that come with Windows, we're building all of those apps using the exact same controls and the exact same APIs that you, as developers, are using. So you're going to get all the benefit of that real drill down that we do on the high quality bar we set for our own apps. You're going to get all that benefit as well. So that's right the way across the board. And these controls have other adaptability for common scenarios as well. And take a simple example here of a menu flyout. And this is a simple drop-down sort of menu, but when the system renders this, it knows at the time that it does this whether the user is using a mouse or whether they're using touch, and it will automatically render slightly differently. So you see there on the left, you've got the mouse one, the options are closer together. It's better use of the screen and appropriate for a mouse usage. But then on the right, we've got more space, bigger hit targets, so it's easier to use when using a finger. And you'll see these kind of features right the way across the board in our control set. Now, when we talk about one set of controls and one app running across all of these devices, of course, what we're not saying is we want you to just to build a lowest common denominator UI that kind of just works on all of these devices. No, we want you to create great experiences that are going to shine on each device. We want you to help create great user experiences, whichever device, whatever screen size the user is on. So we give you great power to tailor your UI to the device. Take this example here, of a calendar. The way that the user wants to interact with a calendar app is going to be different on a tablet-sized screen than it is on a phone. So we can do that. We can show a broader amount of information, see the full month view on the PC view, and then the small date picker on the left. Whereas on the phone, you're going to want to see slightly different information. You want to see just the immediate appointments, just the next few days as the default view. And all of these, if you build it right, the users can always get at all the information. But you think about the user experience you're offering to your users, creating a really great user experience for the phone and a great user experience for the bigger screens. So with this universal Windows platform in Windows 10, you can now literally write to one universal API. We have a common API set that's broad across all of these different device families, and that's in the Windows Universal platform. And then we have extensions to add APIs that are specific to particular device families, like Xbox Avatar and Windows Phone Back Button, these kind of things. And so there's extensions to it, but the broad API set, you'd be able to build your apps against, just create one package to reach every device. And using feature detection and API contracts, you can then customized to take advantage of any device-specific APIs to light up the experience on particular devices or take advantage of extra connected hardware that might be connected to a particular device at a particular time. But you're still creating one app that can handle those different scenarios. And is this, are we giving you yet another whole new way of building apps? Well, no, you really need to think of this as being a superset of the WinRT XAML API set and the WinRT API set that we had in Windows 8.1 and Windows Phone 8.1. And we've massively expanded that and given you this new control set, but the skills you already know to build for Windows 8.1 are completely the same ones you need to build for Windows 10, with the difference that you've got all this vast amount of device families that you can target. So you can continue to write apps to the universal Windows platform in your language of choice, whether that's C, C++, C#, Visual Basic, or JavaScript. And I said it's a superset, and it's some superset. It's not just bringing the 8.1 experience and expanding it. No, we've added over 2,500 new platform features. Great new features, such as the Active Pen, great support for a natural user interface. So pen and ink, we want to make that as natural to users on writing on a screen as it is writing on paper. So we've done a lot of engineering work in there. Bluetooth beacons. So great things there, and gesture recognition, and gaze APIs, and holograms, of course. Cortana across the board, DirectX 12, great video support for gaming, and a load and loads of other stuff that's in the Universal Windows platform. App services is a great one as well, which is like having web services but on device. Really, really cool stuff. All right, so to put this into a practical example, I'm just going to ask Nicola, Metcalf, to join me on stage to give you a demo. Here's Nicola. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Andy. Hi, everybody. So I want to show you a quick Universal Windows application that we've built. So I was doing a little remodeling, and we had to build an application with a developer, so I want to spend time developing rather than remodeling. It's much fun to do that. So we built this application with my team to do that. We have an application that allows us to design, allows us to plan the trip, where to buy a bunch of things, allows us to organize our remodel, and then allows us to visualize what the final product looks like. So here you can see we have a little blank screen. What this is actually is an ink canvas that we've added to the new Universal Windows platform. It allows me to do really smooth inking. It has hardware acceleration. And it's just a simple control that you can use within your application just by dropping within XAML. So I'm going to import a really quick sketch that we've done. I'm not going to draw the whole thing right now. It's going to take forever. So here it is, and I can do really rich things here. For example, if I use my mouse and I've built in the scalability to dual selection. So I want to increase the size, I want to make it a little open space, so I can use my finger now to move away this and I can just have a little more space to do a little more activities. If you can look at the code behind, here you notice that the only thing we have is this in canvas. This is a new control that we've added that allows you to use your finger, it allows you to use pen, it allows you to use mouse to do these rich inking capabilities. To do the lasso, if you look at the code behind, you can notice that I have a couple events. I have an event where it allows me to collect the points every time I press the right button on my mouse, and I'm collecting those points. And as I move the pointer, I can keep adding those points. And finally, once I release the pointer, I can draw the bounding rectangle around the items that I wanted to select. It's very easy to use. Now, the next thing I want to do is actually plan the trip. And to do that, we have this new map control that we've added to the platform. Now, this is actually the exact same map control that's part of the map application within Windows 10. So it's the exact same control. It's very actually rich. It allows you to do things such as tilting right out of the box. You can do the really nice things with your fingers. You can use your mouse to select and do very rich things that you expect from a map control. The beautiful thing about this map control is actually it's fully offline, so the application doesn't have to be online to use this map control. Now, we've also added the ability to add map items. So you can see here I've added some map items from some stores that I want to visit, and I can put in my, if I zoom in, you can see they stay in the same spot. If I look at the code behind, you'll notice that in the XAML, we have a map control. Simply just put this map control right out of the box, and you get this rich control. And if you look at the code behind the XAML, you notice that there's no code to actually do any of the events I just did, to do the tapping, the moving around. That's all handled for you by itself. The only code I have here is to add the map elements. So I simply just set a geopoint for each map element and then put them on the map, and they get drawn on the map. Now, a very cool feature of the map now is we have 3D built in. If I press this button, you'll notice that we actually automatically get a 3D within Seattle. So of course, you have to have the internet for this, so you can download all the vertices. But once you have that, you can actually do very rich navigation around the Seattle. You can see here, this is Andy's house probably. You can see inside, and you can do some very rich interaction. To enable this interaction, the only thing we had to do is just simply set the style. You can see here, I'm setting the style to be the area toggle. And this will enable it to have 3D. That's the only code you have to do. Now, because this is a universal Windows application, it also runs on this Lumia phone that I have right here. So you can see it. I'm going to show you what it looks like using Project My Screen. There it is. So you can notice that the UI actually is reorganized. It's not the same UI as on the PC. You can see the map is now on the top, and we have all the items on the bottom. We can still control it. We still have the beautiful 3D imagery. It needs to be downloaded. There it is. And if you actually notice the application that I was just showing you, if I lower the size of this, you'll notice that the same thing happens here. As soon as the size gets lower, notice it kind of has the phone view. Now, we've added several new controls and several capabilities to the platform that allow you to do this. If you look at the same page I was showing you, the plan trip page, you notice we have this new capability for the visual state manager to do visual state triggers. This allows us to set triggers and change state depending on, for example, the size of the screen. So if the minimum width of a size is 0, it would apply this simple setters to the page. Or if I change the size to be 600 or more, it would change the setters. We're also using a relative panel. A relative panel is a new panel that we've added to the platform. This panel allows you to relate elements to one another and easily align them to the page depending on what you need to do. So that way, you can simply just set some properties to change the properties of elements and align them the way you need to do. Now, of course, this is running on the PC. And because we have the PC, we have many input modalities. We have the mouse, we have the keyboard. You want to take full control of that. And as Andy mentioned, we now have the pivot across all Universal Windows platforms. You can see here, I have a pivot that allows me to organize my page. I can go between the kitchen, the master bedroom, the living room. The beautiful thing about this, I can also use drag and drop. So if I use the mouse, I can simply drag an item from the console down here, and I can put it into the pivot. But we've also added the ability for you to drag and drop from the desktop or from other applications on Windows. So here I have the Photos application. And I'm a big fan of Disney. Of course, you can see I have a little Disney cover for the bed. I'm going to drop this over to the application. You can see we can drop it there, and I can drop it into the pivot. Now, this is very easy to implement in Windows 10. If you look at the code behind, you notice that we have a drop event. In this drop event, you can actually get the binary data of the file that's being passed to you and do whatever you need to do with this file. Here, you can see we notice that this is an image. We create a new image, and we'll simply add it to our application and add it to the pivot. Now, once we're done organizing our room, organizing what we need to do, we need to make sure we can actually visualize it. And to do that, we've built this DirectX model of our room to see what it looks like. And it looks great. You can use your mouse to rotate. Now, this also looks great on the Xbox. You can use the controller to go around the room, go inside the room. Beautiful. But it also looks great on the HoloLens. Now, we've talked about HoloLens being part of the Windows 10 Universal Platform. And here's a little video of build when we showed the same application running on the HoloLens. We've taken the same exact code, the exact same model, and we're able to visualize it using HoloLens. And you can walk around the model, you can go inside, and it stays in spot, and it looks amazing when you wear the HoloLens. Now, one thing to remember about HoloLens is, unlike other DirectX models or DirectX applications you've written, you do not have access to the camera. The user has access to the camera. So you have to be careful about how you actually write this application. And not just that, you also have two screens. You have the left eye and the right eye. So you can see here in the code for the HoloLens, we actually had to add some code to update specifically the left eye and the right eye depending on where the user's head is. So you do not have control of that. So it's very easy to use. So you saw now that it's very easy. We've added many new controls and many new capabilities in the platform to allow you to do very responsive design, add new capabilities such as the map control, the ink canvas, be able to do HoloLens with DirectX, and it's just very easy to use. So I can't wait for you to try it. So thank you.
Thanks, man. Thanks, Nicola. Okay, so there we saw a great demo of the power of the Universal Windows platform and extending an app across lots of different devices. But Visual Studio 2015 makes it easy not only to develop your apps, but to debug them as well. So we got great improved XAML designer in here. So it's easy to review and adapt your UI across different devices. You'll see there we've got a drop-down with loads of the in the visualizer, in the designer. You can see what your UI is going to look like on everything from a 5-inch phone right through different size tablets all the way up to an 84-inch Surface Hub. So you can easily, right in Visual Studio, visualize what it looks like and jump between them and get other views of your same XAML layout. And then when you're done, you can deploy and debug to the Windows 10 endpoint your choice from one universal project. We also got really great tools in Visual Studio that have been massively extended in Visual Studio 2015 for identifying performance bottlenecks. So we've got these really great tools for drilling right down and analyzing the performance, the memory usage, such as the memory utilization graphs while you're debugging. So this is live, real-time information about how your app is behaving, what the memory usage is, and the CPU usage. And you can drill down and identify those hotspots so you know where to put your development effort in order to fix any problems you've got. And we've got these perf tips, kind of tool tips for performance between debugger breaks. So you're getting feedback all the time from the tools that are really going to help you create a really great app. So there you've seen how the Universal Windows platform on Windows 10 helps you to design, develop, and debug and distribute your app. Okay, let's move on to some another topic now. So at Build, we announced some bridges to the Universal Windows platform. So because it's not just about evolving UWP, we want to empower developers and allow them to bring the skills that they use and their preferences and help them to create apps for the Windows platform. So the whole point about these bridges is kind of overcoming an obstacle. It's giving you a starting point to help you to bring your code from other platforms and bring it over as painlessly as possible. I mean, make no mistake, we still argue that to get the very best native app experience on Windows 10, the Universal Windows platform and the XAML UI or the JavaScript version for building true native apps for Windows 10 is the best way of doing that. But we really want to empower developers with other tools and other preferences to create great experiences on Windows 10 as well. So, of course, supporting great app experiences is a cornerstone of our developer strategy. So we're going to look at four different kind of aspects of this. And we're going to start by looking at the investments we're making in helping you bring web technologies and having them access and integrate into the Universal Windows platform. And for that, I'm going to ask David Rousset to join me and to walk us through the web experiences. Thanks. Here's David.
Can you hear me? Yes. So I'm French, so it will be maybe simpler to understand me with my marvelous French accent. So let's switch to the Edge. We've tried to create a new browser to break from the past and Internet Explorer. And to do that, we've created a new rendering engine named the Edge HTML engine. And it's going to be used by Microsoft Edge, but we're going to see also by you as web developer writing Windows 10 applications. So how many of you are web developer in the room? Yes, a bit less than half of the room. So we've been improving a lot our engine. First, using new interoperability features, implementing new stuff really cool for the web, like web audio, APIs, ECMAScript 6, or HTTP2, and you can read a lot of other cool stuff inside that. And we've been working also to improve the engine to make the web just work, meaning that you don't have to fix your website to be able to be compatible for Microsoft Edge. And you will understand this afternoon in the web session how we've managed to do that. We've been improving also a lot the performance of our engine. If you compare this benchmark, it's from Apple, so it's not a Microsoft benchmark. We've been comparing IE11 to Microsoft Edge, and you can see huge improvement of the performance on this specific benchmark. Just for fun, let's have a look to other browsers like Chrome or Firefox. Microsoft Edge today is leading the performance on this specific benchmark. It's still a benchmark, which means that you must pay attention to that, but it's good to compare and have a look to this. Let's have a look at another benchmark. This time it's being written by Google. We are twice as fast as IE11 on this benchmark, meaning that Microsoft Edge, a new JavaScript engine, is much faster than IE11. And again, if we are comparing ourselves to other browsers, we are faster than the other browser on this same benchmark written by Google. The new Microsoft Edge will be the default browser on all Windows 10 platform, which means PC, tablet, and Windows Mobile 10. It will be updated very frequently. It will be like Windows 10, even more frequently than Windows 10. You will have some new page. If you download the latest public version of Windows 10, you can test it. And that's us, as we're breaking from the past, cutting ActiveX or BSOs, you will have the ability to write new extensions using HTML and JavaScript like you're doing today in Chrome or Firefox. It will be very easy to migrate some of your existing extensions in JavaScript to Microsoft Edge. Finally, if you want to take the very same code source and migrate it from the website to a Microsoft application on the Windows Store, you can use it as a hosted web apps, meaning that just take the website, it will be hosted inside Windows 10 on the store, and you will be able to extend it using some new APIs from the universal platform, like tiling, accessing to the control you've seen before. So let's switch to the demo. On the PC. Thank you. Let's use a cool feature of Windows 10. And let's start by using the Microsoft Edge browser. So it's currently a WebGL game using an open source framework named Babylon.js. I've been writing this framework with a friend of mine named David Catu, another French guy. And it's a full screen experience using WebGL and web audio. So you should hear some sound when I will play the game. So it's using web audio to have some immersive audios and 3D spatialization. You can hear the motor that's being changing the play rate of the sounds. I can use either the keyboard or the mouse to control it, but we also have access to Gamepad API, so I can control the plane using the Xbox One controller, which is natively supported by the browser because we're using the W3C Gamepad API, which is a standard API. So the game is very simple, and you need to go through the rings. I don't know if I'm... Yes. You need to train yourself. But you see, a lot of performances, thanks to the new JavaScript engine, to the WebGL rendering engine, and using web audio, plus the Gamepad API. You can have a full-screen experience, like almost native experience and performance using Microsoft Edge. Now let's imagine that I want to extend this experience. You can do it using the new template from the Visual Studio template and the new SDK, just by embedding that into a web app. You're currently seeing that I'm currently using the Xbox Live APIs to sign on and using the new Xbox Live Arcade API. So I'm using my gamer tag, so I've been signed. So I just copy-paste basically the website and extending it using new APIs. And doing that, I've got access to Xbox Live. Let's imagine that I want to go further than that. I can use this specific stuff. So as a web developer, you have to pay attention to this specific part, Windows.Windows. We're doing a feature detection, meaning that if the current JavaScript code is being run inside the Windows 10 platform, we say that we want to extend the experience using, for instance, notification. As this is a live website, once you've done that, you need to save. And once you've done that, you need to commit the code. So I've got a pre-filled git commit command. And finally, I need to git push my code. It should work. OK, so it's being done. Now, let's close the app and relaunch it. What I've been doing is simply adding a time notification. If I'm able to play the game more than 15 seconds without crashing, I will have a time notification. Let's try to do that. So have a look at the bottom of the screen. Oh, let's do that again. This has never happened, OK? Let's do that again. You should see the plane. There it is. And normally, if I'm not crashing, you should see a notification over there. You see, just with the change I've done in GitHub. And now, let's imagine I want really to control the plane. You think that? Because I feel that this is a really immersive experience. I've got a Microsoft band. And the idea is to take control of the SDK, to try to control the plane like that, and really feel like I'm controlling the plane. And look stupid on stage also, which is very interesting. So what we've done is just taking control of the Microsoft Band SDK. We've been extending the web app using this specific API to take control of the plane, but give you idea on how to start from the web and extend it on the Windows 10 platform. Thank you.
Thanks, man. Thanks. Cool. Great stuff, huh? All right, so let's just talk a little bit more about some of these other bridges. So we've got four of these bridges. The second one I want to talk about is classical Windows apps, .NET and Win32. So this, obviously, is our kind of our heart blood in Windows. And there are over 16 million .NET and Win32 apps being used every month on Windows 7 and Windows 8 PCs worldwide, ranging from games to some of the most important line of business apps. And apps written for these classic Windows platform technologies will be able to, with the tools we're about to release, will be able to be packaged and shipped through the store. So packaged as an AppX with the same technology that we use for packaging regular store apps, with all the great ease of update that entails. And we're also kind of virtualizing some of the environment in which these apps run. So it's a way of bringing your existing classical Windows app technologies and have them distributed and discoverable via the Windows Store. And you'll be able to call even more of the universal Windows platform APIs directly from your existing code, like LiveTiles, Cortana, notifications, and more. We're also going to enable developers to reuse their Java and C++ code from an Android phone app to create apps for phones running Windows 10. So this is about using your existing code and assets and reusing that with few or minimal changes to create a phone app running on Windows 10 mobile. You'll also be able to bring your Objective-C code that's being used in iOS applications, and you'll be able to compile that within Visual Studio on Windows. So it enables you to leverage that code and reuse and extend it also with the capabilities only found on the Windows platform. So this, we're not quite ready to announce full details on this programs yet, but watch this space. More information will be coming very soon. All right, let's switch tracks a little bit. Let's talk about the very small stuff. So have we got any makers out there? Any makers? Oh, a few there. OK, cool. You're the people who like to build stuff. So one of the things we've seen at Build is the excitement, not just about software, but about hardware. And you're all doing amazing things with the innovative combination of innovative hardware and software.
So a lot of innovation is coming from that IoT community. So for what IoT is, we've got a little video we want to show you that will kind of put into context what IoT means in the modern world.
We've been there, powering devices for 20 years. Making the difficult look easy. And keeping life simple. Taking you away and guiding you home. Providing care and bringing new life into the world. Opportunity is all around us.
So there you go. Yeah. So as you can see, you know, embedded electronics is everywhere in our lives, and Windows 10 is there as well. It's absolutely an important platform for our whole Windows 10 ecosystem. Right, I'm going to ask Nicola to join me on stage. We're going to do a demo, show you how Windows 10 and IoT really works out.
Thanks,
so,
Andy.
So what do you got, Nicola?
Okay, so a canonical example of an IoT demo is doing a hello world, and that's just by blinking an LED. So I have an LED right here. Now, unless everyone wants to cuddle up and look at this on stage, we made a different decision, and we decided to use this light from all the way from Seattle. So I have a Raspberry Pi 2. It's connected via HDMI to one of the monitors here. We have a network cable that allows us to remote debug from this PC, and I have a mouse connected to this so I can control the UI. And we've connected the light using this relay right here, just the same way that we would connect an LED, just the same way we connect that. So if you look at the code here on my PC, let's go ahead and switch to the dev machine. There you go. You'll notice that this is just a regular Windows 10 application, just like any other Windows 10 device. We have our XAML page, and we have a simple toggle button that we can use to toggle the LED or toggle the light. If you can look at the code behind, you'll see that we have full access to the GPIO controller board that's on the Raspberry Pi 2. And we have access to this because we have the extension SDKs that are available for the different device families. This allows us to set different values to different pins. In this case, we have pin 26, which allows us to control the light. And we can set low or high depending on what's pressing the button. So I'm going to deploy this. Let me switch over to the Raspberry Pi so you can see what it looks like. This is the screen for the Raspberry Pi. It's outputting right now. I'm deploying to this. While that's deploying, I'm going to ask Andy to help me out here.
Oh, okay.
Why don't you put that on?
Yep.
There you go.
Will this hurt?
No, it'll be fine. So not everybody knows this, but Andy's always wanted to be a superhero. So we're going to enable that using IoT. So using this mouse and this IoT device, we can turn Andy into Iron Man.
Yay. How about that? All right.
And one more click, and Iron Man becomes Andy again.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I'm back. Oh,
thank
awesome.
You.
Thank you. That's great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Back to the slides. Yeah, so that's Windows 10 XAML running on this tiny little Raspberry Pi. So we've got really great support, and if you've registered interest for the Internet of Things, then you will have got an email, as I did this week, just about the Raspberry Pi release that's just out now, and we've got loads of great new hardware as well.
Oh,
bloody, what the? Oh my goodness, a cow. Is this your cow?
Sorry.
He told you about me, cow.
It ran away.
That's terrible. Oh, my goodness. Actually, this cow, this cow here, yeah, is actually a great example of the connected, of IoT. So this cow is a connected cow.
Woo.
Yes, thank you. So this connected cow, so we're going to actually hook him up with sensors and we can get loads of great information about, you know, his, what he's doing and great time. So I'm going to just install this device into the cow. Maybe not there. Okay. Hey, look at this. Of course, every cow has a pocket, so we'll put it in the pocket. There we go. All right, cool. So now, Nicola, let me show us how this is going to work and how we're going to get some important information about this connected cow.
Hi. So let's go ahead and switch over to the demo machine. I can show you this. So as you know, many farmers have thousands of cows, and as a developer, I also have thousands of cows, because why not? You want to keep track of the cows. So using these little IoT devices, we're very cheap now. You can keep track of how many steps they've taken, internal and out, and external temperature, do many different things. And you can collect this data, and you can analyze this data. And you can use machine learning within Azure to create this different model. So data scientists can use this data, create different models to detect anomalies. And you can see here, we've created this model already. It looks great, right?
Yeah, move.
And you can see, once you've created this model, we can actually expose this as a web service that you can access via your favorite language. And here we have this web service that allows us to, for example, load the data from today. And you can see you've done that many steps, which is a great job. And we can calculate to see if there's any abnormalities. And you can see here the cow is pretty healthy.
Ooh.
Good job. With 76% accuracy. Now, if I load more data, I can load data for the whole week. See, you've done a good job. And I can calculate this. You can see the accuracy actually increased. We have more data. It's 80% now. But unfortunately, you have some kind of anomaly. Yeah. So I'm going to have to take this cow and get it take
get
a look.
The anomaly fixed.
Thanks, everybody.
All right. Thank you. Great overacting there. So there we go. That was the machine learning. Right, I'm just going to just wrap up now just very briefly about games. So we've got great new support in DirectX 12 for really high resolution graphics in-game. So we've got a video that's been made by our partner Square Enix of a demo, the prototype they're building using DirectX 12 to give you a sense of the great resolution you can get with video gaming now. Detail on the skin, the face, and the, you know, the dirt and the hair detail. You'd be forgiven for thinking that was video, but no, that's all computer-generated graphics using DirectX 12. Really awesome stuff. Right, a little bit more. We already looked at holograms, very briefly turned up in a demo before. We've got another video which has actually been made by the team. I mean, the HoloLens is an amazing piece of hardware. It's packed full of sensors. It's got gesture recognition, gaze recognition, and it's got these little projecting light into each eye to create these virtual images that overlay what you're actually physically seeing. So it's an augmented reality system. And the team have built it and made this video to give you a sense of what the challenges are that they've been facing.
The hardware allows us to take these visions, these ideas about these new products, and make it all real.
Imagine a computer that allows you to put your images anywhere, and you can interact with things as a combination of the real world and holograms.
You have a bunch of different systems that need to come together in one big symphony.
Every time you think you understand it, it's like peeling an onion. There's suddenly another layer of things which you suddenly realize, oh, yeah, of course, we have to figure that out now.
We don't have room for error. We don't have room for drift. We don't have room for those normal things that happen in a device.
So it's working with these people across the world and bringing it all together into this brand new product.
We envisioned an all-in-one device that is untethered with built-in batteries, hands-free, and floating audio.
You have to come up with a holographic processing unit because you're constantly producing data every single millisecond.
Visor lens is so complex. While it looks very simple and pure, it needs to accommodate so many requirements to see progressive content.
The audio components need to take in all of that information about where is my head, where am I looking, so that your brain knows that there's something real over there.
The enclosure wraps around the user's head to provide great weight distribution.
We have so many sensors on this product. To read all those in real time and to do that in a very power efficient way requires the power of what they develop with the new version of Windows.
We need to get the hardware just right so that we can sort of unleash that creativity in the world.
I think we have great ideas. I think when we get it out to developers, we're going to get hundreds of great ideas.
We want to get it out to people and show them, hey, this is real and this actually works. Now, let's see what you can do with it.
Yeah, what do you think? Cool, huh? Yeah. Awesome stuff. Okay, so I just want to go back to our initial statement about Windows 10. The universal Windows platform empowers developers to create the best apps across the full range of Windows devices. And I hope you're going to join us and join the Windows Insider program. You can download and install Windows 10 now in preview, or as you know, many it's coming, actually full release is coming at the end of July. But join us now. You can download the Windows 10 SDK. This is the one we've built, released at Build, and get started building out great universal Windows platform apps. All right, that's me done. I just want to say enjoy the rest of the day. And at this point, I want to welcome onto the stage James Baker, who's going to run through the Azure Services keynote part of this. Thanks very much.
We are... Thanks, Andy. Ciao, Milano. Are you all having a good time? So, the devices and apps opportunities that we've just seen in Windows 10 are fantastic. But what we all know is that all of these apps are powered by great back-end services. These services that are hosted in cloud environments, hosted in services like Azure. Let's just see a quick audience participation. How many of you today are using cloud computing? Great, that's fantastic. How many of you are doing that in Azure? Cool, we've got plenty of headroom, but this is fantastic. What Azure allows you to do is concentrate on the development of those great apps, those great websites, without having to worry about provisioning servers, managing servers. That's the sort of the promise of cloud computing. That's the real promise of Azure. Azure's reach is now truly global. We're in 19 different data centers across the globe. To put that number in context, that's more than both AWS and Google Compute Engine combined. And we're committed to putting more data centers out there because we know that the latency between your end users and the data center is a critical factor of success. We've also got a bunch of super interesting, super high-profile ISVs that are running their successful workloads in Azure today. We've got ISV partners like AccuWeather that are using machine learning to predict and forecast the weather across the planet. We've got Ford and Rockwell Automation that are using Azure IoT services to do predictive... There we go. Hear me better now? There we go. To do predictive maintenance across millions of devices. NBC are running the biggest media streaming events on the planet through Azure Media Services. And Esri are running tens of thousands of SQL databases to become the major player in GIS mapping services across the globe. One of the key design pillars that we want to make to not only ourselves internally, but to you, the customer, is to be open and flexible environment. No longer is Azure about Windows only, .NET only. We want to be able to come to you where your workload is and in what language you're writing in so that you can leverage your existing skills or the most appropriate tool for the job. What does that actually mean? As a personal example for me, I was part of the team that ported Hadoop, an open source Apache project, to Windows. We brought that and we ran that in Azure. It's now called the HD Insight Service. But I've learned that big data services, especially out of the open source community, almost always run best and first on Linux, and they're invariably written in Java. And so instead of trying to make that all change around and run on Windows and .NET, what we're saying is that we're going to make Linux and Java and all of these open source products run the best they can in Azure. That's a strong commitment we're making. Over 25% of the virtual machines running in Azure today are running Linux, and we're committed to making as many distros as we can available in that environment. So one of the new app services that we announced in March, just prior to build, was the Azure App Service. It's not actually a new service. What it is an integrated consolidation of some of the existing pre-existing services. Many of you will know about web apps and mobile services. There's a new Logic app which allows us to define very high-level business processes that integrate multiple API apps so that you can compose existing components, reuse, or use third-party SaaS components to build your high-level business processes that are the backbone of your applications. What also that means is, again, reinforcing the open and flexibility point, that you can write your app service in whatever language you care about. All the bindings are REST APIs, and so it doesn't really matter what the language is that you're writing in. We'll also provide things like continuous integration to really accelerate the software development lifecycle. So you can use any source, not any, but a large variety of source control providers such as GitHub, Visual Studio Online, Bitbucket, and then as you're checking commits into those source control systems, we'll run CI builds, run the tests, and then deploy those services automatically into Azure, and so they're available. If everything's working fine, you can just flick the switch out of the staging slot into production, and then you've got a super agile software development process. One of the other aspects, and one of the strengths and only available in sort of the cloud computing environment and really made a first-class thing in Azure, is a notion of autoscale. So that as your application's running, if the load's increasing, we can then go and scale up the resource that is committed to that application, and so your users don't get a degraded experience. Conversely, when the load diminishes somewhat, we can also go and shut those things down so that you're not paying for resources that you're not really using. That's one of the real values of cloud computing, that true elasticity. One of the other aspects that we've really deeply understood, and that comes from our sort of our history in sort of enterprise computing, is that the cloud is not an all or nothing proposition. We understand that there's many legacy applications running both in enterprises, and ISVs want to reach out to some of these legacy applications. So we've invested heavily in making sure that connectivity back to on-premise legacy systems is a great capability in Azure. And so we're not taking care of that just at the transport level. We've got things like ExpressRoute and VPN so that you can connect back into your on-premise data centers, but also at the application level so that you can connect to your existing SQL databases, your Oracle databases, or your ERP system, such as might be running in SAP or Dynamics. As well as that, we want sort of the modern composition of applications to be able to go and use third-party SaaS components and services that are available. Maybe 10 years ago when you were building your VB6 applications, you were using third-party ActiveX controls that you'd get from vendors and integrate them into your application that way. Sort of the modern approach is that you go and get those components as in the form of services. And we've worked really hard with some of these SaaS providers to make those components available. And as we'll see in the demo in just a few moments, composable into your Logic applications and build those workflows. So great, that's enough slides. Let's go and have a look at some of these, the demo of how we can go and build some of these web applications. Oops. So here we've got our old favorite Fabricam. They're inventing themselves as in the new maker space, which is great. We love the maker space. And they've got a sort of a typical shopfront application here. There's nothing so fancy about the application. It allows us to go and do things like if we want to upload, say, a 3D model of something that we may want 3D printed, they're offering us a service where I upload the model, I submit this to the system, and then they'll go and invest in a workflow that'll eventually go and get that model printed out for me, and I can go and use that. We've got the Channel 9 guide, could be anything you like. Pretty straightforward application, great application, but reasonably straightforward. Let's go and have a look at what it was and what they had to invest in to go and build that application. As you can see here in Visual Studio, we've got some fairly familiar artifacts. We've got a web API that is going to be driving not only the web service, but also the sort of mobile clients. They're all calling into those REST APIs, driving those. We've got our website here, which we just saw, and this also using the API. We've also, in the same solution, got our mobile phone application. Here we happen to be using Apache Cordova, so that out of the same code base, we can create a Windows Phone application, an Android application, an iOS application. Now, many of you would know that have done some Windows Phone development that Visual Studio's had a great emulator for the Windows Phone. What we recently announced was a similar sort of experience for Android. And so you can run your Android phone emulator right here. You get F9 debugging support. You can do the full development lifecycle, and this emulator runs great. You can see it's a little bit slow today, but it's a first-class support using that same sort of Hyper-V technology that the Windows Phone emulator runs. So that's great. That's the sort of some of the code development assets that Visual Studio brings. It's a really tight, integrated environment. But we know that developing a non-trivial software application requires more than just code. It requires sort of assistance throughout the entire software development lifecycle. And there's Visual Studio Online now, which is an online service. If I can switch around to it. We can see here that things like work item tracking, so we can understand how our project's progressing through, and this is all integrated into the Visual Studio tool. Obviously, there's source control, and so I can see the history of all the check-ins. I can see my colleague John Galloway's been very busy working on this application. The thing I mentioned before about the continuous integration builds, we're seeing the results here of check-ins and build and test run and deployments that we've seen going through. And this is the Visual Studio Online portal, but we can also see that same sort of view of the world from the Azure portal. Here's the blade for this application. We can see there's a little bit of monitoring going on, but also down here there's the deployments. And so if we drill into the deployments tile here, we can see a history of the deployments. Again, there's John working hard, and we can see that he's successfully built and deployed a version of the application. And if I think that's good and it's passed a bunch of integration tests, I can go and flick the switch on this and flip that into production right here and now with no break in availability. The other sort of analysis that we want, or the sort of support for the software development lifecycle, is the analytics of your application whilst it's running. While it's running in production, you want to be able to track the usage, the latency, any crashes that are going on, a full 360-degree view of your application. And the Application Insights package, which is also available through the Azure portal here, gives us that information. So we get a rich set of metrics, see how we're going. You can see that there's a bunch of fail requests going in. I could drill into those. If I drill into some of the performance aspects, I can also not only see the sort of the top level view of what the application's doing, but sort of drill in further. And we can see the most often called methods on our web service, as well as any dependencies that we might have that might be causing us some performance issues that we need to go and drill into. You can see here one of the biggest taxes that we're paying is on the database engine. And so I can go and spend a bunch of time investigating how I can speed up the interaction with the database. So that's great for the web service, and you can sort of understand how we can go and instrument a web service reasonably straightforward manner. But also the mobile application. What if I could get that same experience out of the mobile application? Well, it just so happens that Application Insights allows us to instrument that application that we built before in Cordova. And you can see here a bunch of interesting metrics again. Breaking them down by area of application, what region that activity is coming from. You can see where your users are going, what sort of devices that application's running on, because remember we've got that application which is multi-targeting many devices. And you can also see some of the crashes that are occurring out there in the wild. So if I drill into, say, for instance, one of these crashes and have a look at one of the exceptions, you can see a breakdown on phone and versions. And if I look at one of the exceptions that is going on, I can drill in and get exactly right down to the call stack, the line of code, which in this case happens to be a Swift line of code, which is causing the failure. And so I can go and fix that and file a bug against the developer there and go and fix that. And that's all great. The new aspect of Azure Application Services is this thing which I referred to earlier called logic applications. It's a durable workflow that we have which enables us to do business processes. And you can see we've composed this from multiple elements that we're either off a toolbox that we've got over here or that we've written as custom. You can see that there's some third-party assets in here, such as a Salesforce connector, Slack, Twilio. I mean, do we really need to write another SMS or email connector? Let's just use a third-party tool. But we've also got our own custom component here, which is sort of the backbone of this business process. This is our custom activity, which is sending that model off to the printer. Let's go and have a look at the code that we've had to write to do that. So it's just a simple web API code. You could write this in any language you like, anything that can expose a REST API. And the key to all of this is the fact that this can now expose Swagger metadata, which the logic app can use to know how to stitch together information so that the workflow can sort of cascade data and triggers all the way through the long-running workflow. That's all sort of great work. Business processes are especially important for enterprise applications, but also we can see here for ISV applications. So let's switch gears a little bit now. What we've seen here is a very sort of, not traditional, but sort of very Windows-centric, .NET-centric view of the world. At Build, we announced a new member of the Visual Studio family, a code-optimized version of Visual Studio, which we're calling Visual Studio Code. Now, this is a code-optimized version. We don't have a lot of the designers that Visual Studio has, but if you're using code all the day and then want to do this on multiple platforms, Visual Studio Code can become a great experience for you. You can see here on the Mac that we can simply just download this. It also runs on Linux variants as well. And if we see it running here, you can see that it's just a straight up code editor. But the thing is, we still get through the power of the Rosalind compiler. I've still got full text and code peek, all that information, full IntelliSense, and not just completion, but deep IntelliSense so that I've got full completion here that I can go and get my parameter list and everything that I might need out of it. So you're not giving anything up in terms of a code editing experience in Visual Studio Code. You've also got Git integration here, and so because we were using Visual Studio Online, this can integrate directly using its Git integration, and so this exact same project that was running over on Windows is now running in Visual Studio Code. And so we can have a great experience depending on what roles various members of your team are doing. So that's sort of in a nutshell. Visual Studio is still going to be the most fully featured integrated development environment that we produce. If you spend your day in a code editor, checking in, checking out code from a source control system, and work on a variety of non-Windows platforms, then maybe Visual Studio Code is going to be a great tool for you. Both of them sit on top of the Visual Studio Online, and so all of that software development lifecycle support that you get out of VSO is available in both tools, and it could be a great addition to your system. Okay, so great. Let's go and talk now about some data services. Data services on Azure are one of those great examples where there's a choice between running both first-party fully managed services and bring your own IaaS-style data stores as well. We offer both relational in SQL DB as well as NoSQL offerings such as DocumentDB, but then you can also run Mongo, Oracle, whatever tool you like in a sort of an IaaS approach. SQLDB has been one of the longest running services on Azure, and it's got the great features that you expect out of the SQL Server Box product, but it's also now recently added a few new features that we've got that aren't in the Box product. Things such as transparent encryption of your data, full text search. Some of these services are only ever going to be applicable to the service version of SQL, and so this is why it's going to be a great experience. And a new tool, a new server feature called the Elastic Database Pool, which allows us to sort of even out the load that you have across your variety of databases. We see many ISVs and many enterprises which have lots and lots of databases. ISVs that want to run sort of single tenanted, but for many, many customers, databases, and they don't quite know whether they should go multi-tenanted or have many, many databases. This Elastic Pool, Database Pool is a feature which allows you to sort of run the isolation that you get out of single-tenanted databases, but not have to pay the vast resource and management costs that you might associate with running 10,000 databases. Similarly, for the enterprise, we see many databases that have got varying load profiles, and so you need that elasticity that the cloud gives you to go and even that out, and so you're not over-provisioning the resources that you want. One of the other key elements and sort of emerging elements of the data services story is the ability to make applications more intelligent through predictive analytics. There's a lot of operational data, a lot of telemetry and sort of exhaust that appears off applications. And if we can leverage the value of some of all of that and make our application better, then that's going to be a great thing, make us a better application. And that, you know, how do you go about answering some of these questions that you might want out of your application? Some of these predictive questions about customer and user activity that may be difficult in a sort of a straight up data analysis world. You know, the services such as Azure App Service allow us to go and populate our data stores with lots of operational information, but then we want to sort of take that and move that into a data warehouse, such as the SQL data warehouse that we've announced at Build, and then integrate that with other sources of data that are coming from big data processing, a bunch of other interesting on-premise solutions, and then sort of do the normal BI application sort of through visualizers and reporting tools that we've had traditionally. But where the magic really comes is when we hook that stack up to like the Azure Machine Learning Service so that we can run predictive algorithms that allow us to go and feed that back into the application so that we can go and answer those predictive questions that we posed earlier in real time. Another aspect of the machine learning is things like image processing. At Build, we launched a demo application called howold.net. It's a great example, some of you may have heard of it, of how an application go viral. We sort of thought it'd be a fairly cool little application. It's lots of fun to use. You go and upload a photo, and it tries to guess your age and your gender using the Project Oxford services, which I'd encourage you to go and have a look at because they have lots of great image processing, but not just that, speech, text processing. We wanted to show that capability, but we also wanted to show how an application can use that exhaust information to go and understand how it's working and ways in which we can improve it and refine the answers that we're providing. What we didn't sort of really predict was that this was going to go viral. We ended up having 200 million images uploaded and processed in the first 2 days, and this activity is still going. They're still running a vast number. I'm not quite sure of the exact numbers, but many thousands of hits per hour, still uploading, you know, faces of spacemen and dogs, trying to guess the gender and age of it. So let's go and have a look at some of the architecture and how we built that, because it was incredible how simple this thing was architected and componentized, and yet it could still sustain such a high volume of throughput on the system. switching back here. So here's a sort of a very high-level view of the application. We see we've got the website, the front-end website, which we saw the slide of here, which is just receiving the uploaded images and then passing them across to the Project Oxford's Face API service, which was doing the gender estimation and the age prediction service. And then that gave us a vast pipe of information about all of that usage. And so we fed that into the Event Hub service, which again is another service on Azure, which is great for this sort of very high bandwidth ingestion of data. And then fed that across to the Stream Analytics service. So Stream Analytics allows us to have standing SQL-like queries that allow us to do time-based aggregations. And so we set it up for every 10 seconds. We were saying, you know, how many users are we having? How many males are we predicting? How many females are we predicting? What is their age group? And we were breaking all of that information down, as well as some of the performance behaviors of the application, if we're having any crashes, if we're having any latencies accruing there. And from the SQL, from the Stream Analytics, I should say, we're able to move that information across into Power BI, which is a live dashboard, and show that information in more or less real time. We could also drive that information out into a sort of more static storage and then run a bunch of interesting batch processing that we could have done across it as well. So that's a very simple architecture, but we put this application together in literally 2 days using two of us, and it's been able to sustain such a high volume of usage for over an extended period of time, which is sort of an amazing thing that you can achieve. So we can go back to the slides now. One of the other aspects I want to talk about, some of the Microsoft Online Services, is obviously Office. Office has been that sort of staunch holder of enterprises' information for sort of 20 plus years now. But there's been some huge changes across the Office stack in just the last few years. One of them is that now Office is a service. So Office 365 is a service-based approach to Office, including all of the storage of the artifacts, but very interestingly, the sort of the connections of the artifacts and the usage around them. The other aspect of Office is it is now a truly portable system. We're seeing it available in the web, in iOS, in Mac, in Android, as well as in the Windows clients as well. And so for developers that have been going and extending Office to tap into that rich source of enterprise information, they've been previously doing that and using languages such as VBA and .NET, which aren't going to be applicable in this sort of new portable environment. So we've now made add-ins in contemporary portable in languages such as HTML5 and JavaScript, as well as exposing the information that we're acquiring through the service to really provide great insights into developers and so they can go and leverage that information. But why do I really care about Office? I mean, you know, it's not really what I, you know, sort of think about as a developer. Well, it turns out usage. There are 1.2 billion users of Office every day that spend 2 to 3 hours in this system. You can imagine what that means in terms of if your application can go and tap into that source of data. Well, that's what we want to go and do. We want to be able to allow you to go and extend the Office tool sets as well as leveraging that data that Office is accruing. And Office 365 is the great enabler of that. So let's just look at a quick example. We've got that two ways of interacting with or developing for Office. One is the add-in. So here we've got in Outlook an add-in. We've worked with Salesforce so that they've written their add-in in HTML5 and JavaScript, and it sits right in the app bar within Office. So it becomes very contextual based on the message that it's got. And what it's doing here is having a look at the content of each message and saying, here's some opportunities based on the information that it can pull from Salesforce. So you can see how you can apply that to any of the artifacts within Office as well. The other aspect is understanding the interactions between all of the Office artifacts and all of the usage behaviors they've got. And what we've done is built a new engine called Office Graph, which is now holding the connections between all of these artifacts. And we're exposing the information of Office Graph through a new service which we call Delve. Delve here, you can see the various activity around the artifacts, how they relate to each other, how artifacts are trending across an organisation, and that's super interesting information. What we do is have a vision that allows ISVs and third parties to go and populate the Office Graph with their own information so that you can provide additional connections into those office artifacts and then have that information service directly here in Delve. And we can see the highlighted example is one where, again, Salesforce is putting its own information and making it relevant to some of the other artifacts. And it's not just Delve that this is going to be available through. The Office Graph is available through a set of REST APIs with sort of consistent authentication service across them that allow you an application to go and understand the connections between a PowerPoint slide and the people that are there and the messages that led to that the generation of that presentation through any documents and calendar appointments that flowed through that. It's a tightly and sort of scalable system that you can go and build interesting applications around and sort of extract some of the value out of that data. So great, I'd encourage all of you to go and think about what it means to your application to go and tap into that rich vein of data. We've got some programs to go and get started at dev.office.com, as well as I'd encourage you all to go and have a look at the opportunities on Azure at azure.microsoft.com. And I believe if we fill in a survey, Roberta might tell me if this is correct, there could be some Azure pastime that you can go and use and try out some of those interesting things. And so with that, I'd like to thank you for your time today and welcome Fabio back to the stage.